First Pains and Messiah Have They Started Yet? By Robert C. Newman. Abstract to this talk explores the concept of birth pains, unquote, in connection with the end of the age. It asks whether these birth pains have started yet, and looks at evidence from false religions, wars, famines, earthquakes, persecution, moral decay, and the spread of the gospel. The idea of birth pains shows up rather significantly in Jesus' Olivet Discourse, as we see here in Matthew chapter 24, verses 3 through 8. As he sat on the Mount of Olives, the disciples came to him privately, saying, "Tell us, when will these things be, and what will be the sign of your coming, and at the close of the age?" And Jesus answered them, "See that no one leads you astray, for many will come in my name, saying, 'I am the Christ,' and they will lead many astray. And you will hear wars and rumors of wars. See that you're not alarmed, for this must take place, but the end is not yet. For nation will rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there will be famines and earthquakes in various places. All these are but the beginning of the birth pains." Questions we want to consider in this talk is, what is this birth pains image? When do these pains begin? Is there any reason to think they've already begun? We want to look, first of all, at other occurrences of the birth pain imagery in the New Testament. We have the parallel passage in Mark, chapter 13, verse 8, which we'll not look at. We have Paul in 1 Thessalonians 5, 3, John's vision in Revelation 12, 1 and 2, Paul's quotation from Isaiah 54, 1. Let's look at those. 1 Thessalonians 5, 1 through 3, Paul says, "Now concerning the times and seasons, brothers, you have no need to have anything written to you, for you yourselves are fully aware that the day of the Lord will come like a thief in the night, while people are saying there is peace and security. Then sudden destruction will come upon them, as labor pains come upon a pregnant woman, and they will not escape." So Paul in 1 Thessalonians 5, 1 through 3 says the birth pains come suddenly, the birth pains are inescapable, and like Matthew 24 and Mark 13, it looks like these birth pains are referring to something at the end of the age, something, as theologians would say, that's eschatological. In Revelation 12, 1 and 2, "And a great sign appeared in heaven, a woman clothed with the sun, with the moon under her feet, and on her head a crown of 12 stars. She was pregnant and crying out in birth pains and in agony of giving birth." Here in John's vision, Revelation 12, 1 and 2, we have a more puzzling situation. The context suggests the event is set at the birth of Christ. It's possible that it could refer instead to Jewish recognition of Jesus as Messiah at the end of the age. Really don't know, and probably won't find out until the events take place. We do have warrant for Jewish recognition of Messiah at the end of the age. Well, let's look at some more passages here. Paul's quotation in Isaiah 54:1. "The heavenly Jerusalem has no labor pains," he says. Her rival, perhaps the earthly Jerusalem, does. Birth pains in the Old Testament are sketched for us several places in Isaiah. Isaiah 26, Isaiah 66, Isaiah 13, and in Psalm 48, and then in Isaiah 21, and in Jeremiah several places. Let's look quickly at some of those. Isaiah 26, 17, 18. "Like a pregnant woman who writhes and cries out in her pains when she is near to giving birth, so were we because of you, O Lord. We were pregnant, we writhe, but we have given birth to wind. We have accomplished no deliverance in the earth, and the inhabitants of the world have not fallen." Isaiah 66, 7 and 8. "Before she was in labor, she gave birth. Before the pain came upon her, she delivered a son. Who has heard of such a thing? Who has seen such things? Shall a land be born in one day? Shall a nation be brought forth in one moment? As soon as Zion was in labor, she brought forth her children." Isaiah 13, 6 through 9. "Wail, for the day of the Lord is near, as destruction from the Almighty it will come. Therefore all hands will be feeble, and every human heart will melt. They will be dismayed, pangs and agony will seize them. They will be in anguish like a woman in labor. They will look aghast at one another, their faces will be aflame. Behold, the day of the Lord comes, cruel with wrath and fierce anger, to make the land a desolation and destroy its sinners from it." Psalm 48, verses 5 through 7. "As soon as they saw it, they were astounded. They were in panic. They took flight. Trembling took hold of them. There, anguish as of a woman in labor. By the east wind, you shattered the ships of Tarshish." Well, Isaiah 21 passage we looked at, the woman is seized with pain like the pangs of a prophet is seized with pain, like the pangs of a woman in labor. This apparently refers to the destruction of Babylon by the Medes and the Elamites. One verse, verse 9, fallen, fallen is Babylon, is applied in Revelation 18:2 to a future event. Birth pains in Jeremiah occur several times, usually for Israel or its neighbors being overcome by the prospect of invasion. Only Jeremiah 30 seems to be speaking of the end of the age. Jeremiah 35 through 7. Thus says the Lord, we've heard a cry of panic, of terror, and no peace. Ask now and see. Can a man bear a child? Why then do I see every man with his hands on his stomach like a woman in labor? Why is every face turned pale? Alas, that day is so great, there is none like it. It is a time of distress for Jacob, yet he shall be saved out of it. Well, trying to pull these things together, birth pains in the Old Testament and New Testament, we see that the picture basically is the reaction of humans to terrifying circumstances that have come upon them is compared to the birth pangs of a woman in labor. Prominent in the picture is the idea of circumstances being inescapable, and less frequently perhaps an implication of a sudden or unexpected coming. The term is also found in the rabbinic literature, which suggests that the idea of birth pains was commonly used in the New Testament period, not just by Christians. The rabbinic literature uses the phrase, the birth pains of the Messiah. As we look at where these passages occur, how they occur, this does not mean the Messiah's pains, but those out of which the Messianic age will be born. Here's a sample out of Exodus 16:29. Rabbi Eliezer, flourished about AD 90, said, if you observe the Sabbath, then you would be protected from three punishments, from the birth pains of the Messiah, from the day of Gog, and the day of great judgment. Tanhumah 9a says, God has shown mercy to Israel, that he led the ones with Jeconiah into the exile before the ones with Zedekiah, so that the oral Torah would not be forgotten by them, and so that they would remain in Babel in their schools from that time until now. And over them has neither Edom, that is Rome, nor Greece had authority, nor has anyone threatened them with religious persecution. And even in the days of the Messiah, they will not see the birth pains of the Messiah. Sanhedrin 98b, Ulla said, let him come, Messiah, but let me not see him. Rabbah said likewise, let him come, but let me not see him. Rabbi Joseph said, let him come, and may I be worthy of sitting in the shadow of his ass's saddle. Abiah inquired of Rabbah, what is your reason for not wishing to see him? Shall we say because of the birth pains of the Messiah? Birth pains in the rabbis shows us that they expected difficult times to come just before the Messiah appears. These times would be disastrous for unfaithful Jews, pagan nations. They would even be fearsome for the righteous. Well, what are the birth pains? From Matthew 24, verses 3 through 8, we have a list. False messiahs, wars and rumors of wars, famines, earthquakes. From the context in Matthew 24, 9 through 14, we can also add persecution, apostasy, betrayal, false prophets, lawlessness, weakened love, and worldwide gospel proclamation. So, that's kind of a list of things that are called the birth pains, if you like, in the Olivet Discourse, the Matthew 24 passage. When do they begin? Well, these various disasters have been happening throughout church history. Gospel has gradually spread until it has nearly covered the earth now in the past 2,000 years. It looks like, in some sense, the birth pains began with the earthly ministry of Jesus. We see a somewhat similar picture in Revelation 6, where the seals are opened up, and the seals 1 through 5 are parallel to the birth pains in Matthew 24. It's not till we get to seal 6 do we reach anything that is clearly unprecedented. The throne room scene in Revelation 5 suggests that no one is qualified to open the seals till Jesus becomes qualified by his atoning death and resurrection. Well, are birth pains then signs of the end? How do they function that way if they began in the first century? Well, perhaps they show us that God's intervention is necessary to bring the end about. Perhaps the phenomenology of birth pains is implied. I understand that the birth pains become more frequent as the time of birth of the child approaches, and they become more severe as the birth approaches. Perhaps that is what we have implied by these situations. Are these particular things that we see listed in the Olivet Discourse expected to get worse? More false Christs and false prophets? That fits the picture in the Olivet Discourse. That fits the picture of the two beasts of Revelation 13. That picture fits Paul's picture of the man of sin in 2 Thessalonians. Are we to expect more persecution, more moral decay? Yes, 2 Timothy 3 sketches that for us. Are we to expect worse disasters? Well, the biblical picture that we see in Revelation, where we have the seven seals and seven trumpets and seven bowls, it is clear that as you look at the disaster as pictured by these seals and trumpets and bowls, that they get more severe as you move from the early ones to the late ones. So there is some warrant for that. So a question we might well ask of a practical sort is, are these disasters that we see sketched for us and by Jesus in the Olivet Discourse and that have been happening since early church history, are they getting worse yet? Well, USA Today, back in 1994, January 20, had a chart, the most costly U.S. disasters up to January 1994. And it listed 10 disasters, and 7 of those 10 had occurred in the past 10 years before 1994. I made an update of the same sort of thing running to 2001, and for that, 6 of the 10 worst disasters had occurred coming up to 2001. Now, these are U.S. disasters, and they're most costly disasters, so we're not looking worldwide in these. And we did try to make some correction for inflation, but obviously the disasters became more costly as you had disasters going on in more populated areas as the U.S. has become more and more filled with people. So 7 of the 10 from the 1994 list that occurred in the past 10 years. With my update to 2001, 6 of the 10 of the worst 10 in that list had occurred in the past 10 years, and 9 of the 10 had occurred in the past 20 years. But these are generic disasters, not Jesus-specific list, and they're limited to the U.S., whereas Jesus' birth pains are not. If we condense Jesus' lists, we get something like this. False religions, and they might involve false prophets then or false messiahs. Wars, famines, earthquakes, persecution, moral decay, and the spread of the gospel. Now that's a kind of a list where we've combined some things and we get it down to 7. Let's look at these 7. False religions. Well, there are lots of religions out there. The last time I looked on the website adherence.com, it listed over 4,200 religions. According to the biblical material, all of these religions are false but Christianity, but not all of these religions are prophetic or messianic. That is, looking to specific events in the future and looking to coming of a Messiah type figure. There is, of course, abundant anecdotal testimony for a proliferation of false messiahs and false prophets. It would be hard to try and put together statistics on this particular kind of situation. We will be trying to do some statistics here, but statistics have certain problems. One of them is this, that recent statistics are typically far more complete than earlier statistics, and it's much easier to count larger events and harder to keep track of smaller events. One of the complications on the false religions, false messiahs, is if you talk about messiahs who have small enough following, there are enormous number of them.
Whereas if you talk of messiahs who have big followings, there are a lot less of them. And same sort of thing with religions. False religions. They are probably increasing in number since we have an increasing world population and we are having more and more people in contact with Christianity, and therefore more and more tendencies to try and mimic Christianity in one way or another. Those who reject Christianity are more open to combining Christianity with non-Christian elements, and we see that in many of the religions of the last couple of centuries. And of course, with the increasing transportation and affluence and such, there's more mixing of peoples through the world, and therefore more mixing of religious ideas. So it's probably fair to say that false religions are increasing in number. The idea of the supernatural has not gone away, and the picture we have in the Olivet Discourse is dealing with religions that invoke the supernatural in some significant way. What about wars? Well, here's a chart for the frequency of wars from 1400 to 2000. Conflicts per decade is the number that are given in the vertical side, and the items on the list are 30, 60, 90, and 120. And you can see that the numbers were running between perhaps 30 and 60 from 1400 till about 1800. And then in the 19th and 20th centuries, the frequency rolled up between 60 and 120 conflicts per decade. Is actually down a little bit at the when this graph cuts off, but that's what it looks like there. Here's another graph. This is war's severity and duration, and just looks at the last one and a half centuries up to 1950, from 1800 to 1950. Now, here we have a magnitude on the left side, and the magnitude is basically total number of people killed in the wars, whether they be participants, soldiers, or civilians. And magnitude is given in powers of 10. So 3 would be 10 to the third, 1,000, 4, 10 to the fourth, 10,000, 5, 10 to the fifth, 100,000, 6, a million, 7, 10 million, 8, 100 million. As you can see from this graph, there have been no wars in which 100 million people were killed yet. The duration of the war is shown by the length of the line. And you can see that we have virtually a solid line running along 3. You've hardly had a year in which there haven't been 1,000 people killed in some kind of war or other from shortly after 1800 up to 1950. Mm-hmm. Also, the next line up, wars in which 10,000 people are killed, has been fairly continuous through that whole period as well, with gaps here and there. It's not until we get to about 1850 that we begin to have wars in which more than 100,000 are killed. And then not till 1850 in which we have over a million killed, and then not until the 20th century, actually, that we have wars in which 10 million are killed. We have World War I and II shown in that particular way. So that's wars and their severity and duration. And you can see there's certainly some warrant for feeling that the wars are getting more severe and such, and perhaps more frequent as well, though this map is not real well designed to show that particular question. What about famines? Well, here's a graph of famines from 1930 to 2000 done by decades. And as you can see, the number of famines is listed on the vertical between 0 and 50. And we obviously have had some increasing famines since the 60s. The 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s all see more famines than the decade before. Large famines is here for famines in which many, many more people die or are affected, etc. We have similarly got an increase in recent years as well. You see, for clearly on that chart. What about earthquakes? Well, this is a graph of earthquakes with 1,000 or more deaths from 1900 to 1999. And you can really see it goes up and down, and there's no obvious trend upward in recent years. Decades of the 40s and the 70s had the most earthquakes with over 1,000 deaths, though the 90s are probably a third worst decade in that direction. Earthquakes measured another way, with magnitude 7 plus, big earthquake. And you can see the 40s had nearly 300 of those, and no decade has come close to that since. The 80s was actually rather low, the 90s is pretty high, but no obvious increasing trend. Persecution. The World Christian Encyclopedia estimates 69.4 million Christians have been killed by persecution since AD 33. It would be tough to construct really accurate figures of that sort, but that's the number, 69.4 million Christians killed. Of these, 45.4 million were killed in the 20th century. So, about two-thirds killed in the 20th century. Of these, 13.3 million killed since 1950, so much of that was in the first half of the 20th century. So the rate for the first 19 centuries in persecution is 0.75 per century. The rate for the 20th century is 45.4 million. The rate currently, however, is 16 million per century. It's come down. There's the status. Moral decay. How do you measure moral decay? Well, you could certainly construct some criteria. Most of the material will be anecdotal. We're going to use some crime statistics to try and estimate that. Worldwide crime statistics are just getting started. The UN has now conducted 5 global crime surveys, 1974, 78, 84, 88, and 94. Here's what homicides look like per 100,000 people, with the developing nations seen in blue and the industrial nations seen in red. And what's clear is that in more recent years, the homicides per 100,000 among the industrial nations has risen very substantially. The trend, if anything, for the developing nations has been somewhat down. Another way of measuring this is to look at countries reporting changes in crime rates. And the statistics we have for this are 1986 to 94, so not very long range. Number of countries on the left, three crimes shown here, homicide in blue, rape in red, theft in yellow, and the countries that are showing crime rates down or stable are in the left-hand brackets there, the left-hand set of three bars. The middle ones, the crime rate's up 10 to 100%, and the right-hand side up over 100%. Well, you can see clearly that there are a lot more countries that have their crime rates rising than have them down or stable, and that there are a substantial number of countries in which the crime rate has been up over 100%. So you have somewhat, I think, from moral decay on that. Spread of the gospel. Jesus and the Bible do not say that all or nearly all will accept Christ. Jesus does say the gospel will be proclaimed throughout the whole world before the end comes. Well, how can we measure something like that? Here's a chart on the spread of the gospel from 1900 to 2000, and it's done this way. The numbers on the left are percent of people who have, blue, unevangelized, red, evangelized non-Christians, and yellow, Christians. If you look across for the four periods we have here, 1900, 1970, 1990, and 2000, you can see the percentage of Christians has probably gone down slightly, but has hovered between 30 and 40% that whole time. The number of unevangelized has come down from about 53 or 4% down to under 30% in that time.
and the number of evangelized non-Christians has gone up from a little over 10% to about 40%. So you can certainly say that the gospel has been spread, and the number of people who have not even heard it has come down pretty substantially, but it's nowhere near zero yet. It's still up in the upper 20%, so 27%, something like that. Conclusions. These seven items characterize the period between the first and second comings. They certainly function as signs of the end in the sense that they show us we need God's intervention to rescue us from sin and its effects. There is good exegetical warrant to suppose they will increase in severity and frequency as the end arrives. While they are currently, whether they are currently increasing, gives us a mixed answer. Yes, for wars, famines, persecution, moral decay, and spread the gospel. No, for earthquakes, and uncertain for false religions. Conclusions. Given these items, we may well be in the beginning of the end. There are still about 30% of the world's population unexposed to the gospel. Earthquakes have apparently not begun to increase. So we remind ourselves of what Jesus had to say, Matthew 24, verses 32 through 35. Now learn this lesson from the fig tree. As soon as its twigs get tender and its leaves come out, you know that summer is near. Even so, when you see all these things, you know that it is near, right at the door. I tell you the truth, this generation will certainly not pass away until all these things have happened. Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will never pass away. We see basically a picture that Jesus does say these sort of things are going to happen. Some of them have been happening all through church history. It looks like a number of them have begun to increase in recent times here. A few of them have not yet clearly done that. And so we can say, I think we are not at the end yet, but we may be getting close. The end is not yet, but it may very well be near.